You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum. Hi, Ryan. How are you?
Hi, Michael. I'm okay. How are you?
It's always good seeing your face.
It's nice to see your face as well.
I hope everyone's having a wonderful week, and thank you for listening to the podcast. Thank you for continuing to listen. If you're just here for Emil Hirsch, I hope you stick around and say, hey, you know what? This ain't half shit, and you want to stick around a little longer, because that would make me really feel happy and good about myself and increase self-esteem and...
Half shit. That's still rattling around in my brain.
You like half shit?
I'm trying to make sense of it.
We'll get into everything after the show. We'll get pretty much right into Emil Hirsch now. Just letting you know, I have a show this coming Saturday, July 31st at 2 p.m. and 6 p.m. Two shows. Go to stageit.com and type in Sunspin. That's my band. You can also go to sunspin.com and get tickets. Please come check it out. I think you'll enjoy it. We play some covers, play some originals. Our CD's out. We've got merch, tons of shit. If you're liking the show, I'd love for you to follow us. The handles are at Inside of You Podcast on Instagram and Facebook, at Inside of You Pod on the Twitter. You could subscribe to us on YouTube. You could watch these videos, or you can listen to them on Apple, Stitcher, and other ways. But please, please subscribe. Write a review. Really helps the show, the little show that could. And we appreciate that. And join the lovely Patreon. Patreon helps the podcast in more ways than one. So thanks for being a part of Patreon. And I love all my patrons. And right now, this guy was pretty damn interesting. He's had a really cool career. I mean, Into the Wild and working with Tarantino and working with a lot of big actors. I mean, he's done it. Lords of Dogtown.
Yeah.
I mean, he's done some pretty diverse roles.
Yeah,
I would say this is a really good conversation, and I was excited to hang out with him for an hour. So let's get inside of Emil Hirsch.
It's my point of view. You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum.
Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum was not recorded in front of a live studio audience.
I took my friend to play pickleball the other day. She didn't have that much experience, and she dived for the ball.
Oh,
like,
boy.
Dive.
On concrete.
No. She hit the chain link fence, but like Superman, like horizontal, like hit it, but then bounced off the fence and slammed onto the concrete and broke her hand.
While you were playing with her.
Yeah, and like I wasn't playing with her. She was playing my friend Kenny. And then I look over and like everyone stops what they're doing and they starts walking towards her. And she had broken this bone right here, which is your index finger, but in the hand part. And so it was like hours in the ER. It was crazy.
I don't want to tell anybody I broke my hand playing pickleball.
I know. For us, it'd be a little.
But is that what I'm seeing? Like, I went on your Instagram and I saw it. It was like you're joining the first Pro-Am celebrity tournament in November. Is that what that is for pickleball?
Yeah, which is funny because I go over to Randall's house to just play a game, and he's like, films me and just says that. I'd never even heard of it before that.
Now, was Randall the director of Midnight in the Switchgrass?
Yeah, Randall's the director of Midnight in the Switchgrass, who I've known for, you know, he produced Lone Survivor, and then he produced another film I did, and so I'd known him for a while.
Wow.
He's a character, though. He loves playing pickleball. He's super competitive about it. Like, he hires pros to, like, come to his house and train him and, like be brutal on him and, like, brutal drills. Like, I'll come over, and he's, like, dinking with some pro, like,
Wait. Your friend Randall, who directed Midnight in the Switchgrass, he grunts after he hits. He's one of those guys that when you watch tennis and you see him, they go, huh, huh.
He grunts on every serve.
Oh,
it's
my
not
God.
Just like a, it's like a, oh. it's like the serve is like some sort of release every time. It's like, oh.
I always find that so funny. I mean, I played tennis my whole life and I would suck in grunts. I'm not grunting. I'm not making any noises. Maybe I would have been a better tennis player if I would have grunted more. I don't know.
Would you ever tell guys, were you like, could you be a little quiet? Like, could you try to not moan as much on the court?
Yeah, I'm uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's really like, it's kind of like affecting my play.
Yeah, it's loud and it's distracting. So stop it. All right, dude, look, man, you've been in everything. I mean, I look at this list of movies and I'm incredibly jealous. I'm like, Into the Wild, The Girl Next Door, Lords of Dogtown, Lone Survivor, The Comeback Trail, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Milk, Killer Joe. It's like you've done all these movies. I think if I did one of these movies, I'd be freaking thrilled. I think my parents would be very happy that I did something, that I accomplished something. And now Midnight in the Switchgrass. So you play this detective, and I saw the trailer for it, and I want to watch it because this looks intense as shit. It's got Megan Fox and Robert De Niro.
Bruce Willis.
Well, he looked like Robert De Niro.
They're old dudes, you know.
What was it like on that film? And what's the movie about?
So it's like a serial killer kind of movie where I play the kind of the good guy cop, you know, just an honest dude, a real religious guy, depends on his wife to give him that real spiritual sustenance from the brutal job. And he's trying to crack cases that are just really hard to crack. And so it's sort of a film, you know, like kind of tracking the killer, tracking the cops, trying to get the killer. They sort of converge at a certain point.
Now, I know how much research you do on roles and stuff. Did you do a lot of research on, I mean, have you already done research on other?
Well, I feel like because I did so much on Lone Survivor to play a Navy SEAL, in a certain way, a lot of the law enforcement roles I've done afterwards, I definitely feel like I pulled from a lot of that research I did, just because I did a lot on that one. And so there's something about that you kind of don't forget a lot of it.
Yeah.
Just the general vibe. It's interesting. I was talking about this the other day where because of the way like Netflix and all these true crime documentaries work, you know, like people have done a lot of research and they don't even realize it. Like we've watched most average viewers, at least if you watch What's in the Zeitgeist, there's so many of these true crime things, you know, that you're a bit more exposed. You know, you've heard a lot of homicide detectives talk in interviews more than you think.
Yeah. I love seeing Lucas Haas because he's a great guy. And I know you're a good friend of his. I know him for years as well. And it's good to see him. He's such a good actor and you don't see him enough. You just don't for some reason. And I wish you would. I know he does a lot of indies and things like that. But seeing him in a role like this, I'm just like, just that dirty kind of dark role. And I don't know where it goes. I know they're trying to, you know, you see the trailer and you're thinking one thing. And I know it's going to be something else. But it's exciting to see that. I'm sure it's exciting to you as a friend of his.
Yeah, I mean, I've been friends with Lucas forever. We worked together on Alpha Dog, you know, 17 years ago. And I was a big fan of Lucas as just a kid. I remember I used to rent his movies at the video store when I was a kid. And, you know, Lady in White, Witness, and all these movies he did. I mean, he was like a big deal. Even just as a kid. So to get to work with him and be friends with him after all these years was pretty cool. And I felt like his role was it's so interesting because he has such like a baby face and this like kind of innocence to him, and seeing that kind of used for the darkness of the part, I thought was just like, aside from being extremely talented and great in the movie, it's also just really smart casting too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's a big, you know, it's so important that parts are well cast. And I felt like that was a surprisingly good choice for that particular part for him, you know?
Yeah. You know, I've seen a lot of interviews with you and all the people that you've worked with. And what comes into my mind is, do you ever get starstruck? I see you like, there's a shot on the comeback trail with like De Niro behind the camera, giving you the off camera lines to you. And I'm thinking, that's gotta be the most surreal thing. I know you're probably used to it. Well, do you get used to it? And do you ever feel like, God, I sucked in front of one of the greats. I'm sucking. I can't get it. I'm getting nervous.
I don't think I get that used to it. I remember like my first day on Comeback Trail with De Niro, I was already really prepared because it was a scene with just lots of lines, just rattling them off nonstop, but I was still so nervous. And then we started the scene and he was just like, came guns blazing, like just on every word on point, like just so good. I was like, oh my God, like. And I remember I dropped a cue and he was like, oh, then you say that. And I was just like, oh my God, like I forgot a line with De Niro, like literally like the shame. And I remember I was like, oh my God, like just like I was like, dude, I'm like 36. Like this dude's older than me. Like, and I remember I went back to my trailer And I learned my lines like so well. Cause I was like, there's no way I'm ever going to let him like remind me of my cue ever again.
So he just looked at you and goes, you missed the line about he goes, that.
And then you say that in there. And I was like, oh my God. Like it was such like a, I don't know. I mean, he's so good. It's crazy. He's really good.
Well, I read. Go ahead.
And even with like Tarantino, I was like, I don't think I've ever been more nervous around anybody than around Quentin.
What's his personality like? I mean, is it like you see on the daily? We're going to do this. Yeah, this is going to be great.
He's basically Quentin. I mean, he's always Quentin. But I was such like a following devoted fan of his forever that I was just like, it was like having like a cult leader around or something. I was just like, you know, I don't know. It's like, I grew up watching his movies so much that, you know, it's like, I just can't, I tried to treat him like a regular or just be calm around him, but I couldn't.
You couldn't, you were always.
Other people I think could, but I couldn't do it.
What kind of direction did he give you? I mean, do you remember a specific direction or like the way he was acting was he very helpful? Did he know exactly what he wanted?
Yeah. I mean, I remember early on we did a read through and I was kind of playing Jay Sebring more as like what I would see in little video clips of him where he's sort of like a kind of a calm, kind of like laconic, dour guy. And I sort of did that in the read through. Where it was like Brad and Leo and Burt Reynolds at the time. And it was like all these crazy, awesome Margot and Dakota Fanning. And he called me afterwards and he was like, you know, he basically gently told me that I was on the wrong path. So he basically was like, this isn't a biopic. He's like, you can have fun with the line. This is Tarantino dialogue. I'm giving you permission to be more flamboyant. He was like, Jay isn't gay. He's not gay, but he's a flamboyant guy. He's like, you can bring that side of yourself. He's like, I'm giving you permission to have fun, to enjoy it, to be more flamboyant. And as soon as he told me that, he really kind of, I was like, I went back and I read the scenes the way that I had played them in the read through. And I was like, oh my God, like, what did I do? Because I totally, as soon as he told me that, I completely understood what he wanted and what he meant. And every line made sense that way.
Wow.
But I was trying to like kind of fit a square peg into a round hole because I was taking these preconceived notions of what I thought Jay Sebring was exactly like based off some video interview. And, you know, sometimes in order to kind of get to the truth of a scene the way it's written, you need to like not adhere perfectly to your preconceived notions of what it should be.
Yeah. Well, a lot of times you hear these horror stories and it's happened. It hasn't happened to me, but it's happened to some friends who are famous that they'll do a table read and they just, for some reason, the producer and the director's like, no, this guy's fucking completely off. And they just fire him. It was nice enough for him to call you and be like, no, you could do this. I just know what you're doing. You're playing it more like a biopic. You need to play it. Like, have fun.
Man, I remember when I first got that call, I was like, oh my gosh. I like literally was driving and I like pulled the car over. I was like waiting for the bomb to drop. And I was just like, okay. It was pretty funny though.
Have you ever been fired by a job?
He's definitely the one that I just couldn't treat him like a normal dude. I was just too starstruck.
Have you ever been fired off a job?
No.
Wow. I have.
Not while I was shooting. I think I've lost parts that they had like given me and then I like they took them away. That's happened for sure though.
Oh God. You said in an interview that sometimes you feel like you've forgotten it all when you get on set. Like you question everything and then it takes you like a day or two. How does that work? You after all these movies, you just feel like sometimes you go back on set and you're like, do I know how to do this? Explain that.
Yeah, it's weird. It's almost like an irrational fear or something that basically before almost every single job I do, if there's like more than a week between the job or something, there's a point where I'm like, man, I don't know if I can do this. It's like, there's a part of me, I'm like, well, you've been through this before and you do know how to do this and you'll get on set and you'll do it. And that's like your thing. And, but like the belief that I can't do it is like real. I mean, it's like there.
Do you feel nerves? Is it nerves? Do you feel these like intense, like anxiety, or what is that?
Super intense anxiety. And also like more than just a feeling, like the actual, like the thinking of like, I don't think I can do it. Like, I don't really think I'm up to this. It's a weird thing.
And you know how crazy it is, right? You know how you're logically, you're a smart guy. So you're thinking, I've done this. I've killed it. I know what I'm doing. So why am I feeling like this?
I know. It's the weirdest thing. I don't know. I've talked to a couple actors that kind of, they're like, yeah, you have that too. It's kind of a weird thing. I don't know. It's probably just sort of nerves or just sitting around with too much to think about. I don't know though. I almost wonder if like when you stop, if I were to stop feeling that way, I almost wonder if like something would get stale or if I wouldn't be as excited or, you know, because you only get that way if you care. Like if you don't care at all, you're not going to be like, I don't know if I can do this. You're going to be like, I don't care if I can do this. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's a different thing.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
I mean, when you're doing Lone Survivor, this story always baffles me. I've never heard a story like this where this guy, actor, you, goes to a party, you see Peter Berg, you know Peter Berg, and, you know, you want to get Lone Survivor. This story, I think, is fascinating.
Yeah,
tell us this story, because I don't think a lot of people have heard this.
So I had heard Pete was making Lone Survivor, and I would occasionally see him in the gym in Venice Beach, because we both lived, he lived in like Westwood or Santa Monica, but he liked to work out at Gold's Gym and I would see him in there. So he mentioned that he was making Lone Survivor. And so I saw him at like, I don't know, some sort of party, and he was with a friend, and I went up to him. I was like, what's up with Lone Survivor, man? And he was like, you know how there's like NFL movie and like, you know, it's like, you can't play like a linebacker. And it was like, I mean, it was like a really like bow down nerd. You know what I mean? I was like, oh, okay. And I had read the book and I really was moved by the book. So I wrote Pete a letter being like, you know, how I felt about the project, what, you know, how I wanted to be a part of it. And my agent was like, I don't know. He just doesn't see you for this. And I was like, just come on. And I wrote him a second letter.
Wow.
And at one point he wrote back to me, like, show up at Gold's early tomorrow. And I was like, what time? And he didn't write back. And I was like, oh man, this is one of those like psychological psychops experiments or something. So I woke up at 4 a.m. because Gold's Gym opened at like 6 or 5:30. And I was like waiting at the gym as it opened. And this guy, T.R. Goodman, who was the like coach trainer guy, shows up and he's like, oh, what are you doing here? And I was like, oh, well, Pete told me to show up here early. And he's like, started laughing. He's like, come back in like 2 hours. So I came back. And
were you pumping, by the way? Were you pumping up? Well, or were you just waiting for him like, holy shit, I want, what the hell is this about?
I was just like ready to go. I, you know, and basically they put me through this really hard workout that day at Gold's Gym. I want to separate a really hard workout for an actor from like Navy SEAL training. It's really not comparable in any way at all. But for me, it was like probably the hardest I'd ever had to work out. And so they didn't give me the part. Pete just said, you have to show up here every day for like the next few months. I'm not giving you the role because I genuinely don't know if you can do it. And I'm not going to disrespect the SEALs and this guy's family by giving an actor that's like a punk if he can't do it. Because I was a little bit, you know, I wasn't really getting great shape. And so it was every day from 6 a.m. to like 11.
Oh God.
Or 11:30 I would finish. And it would be usually like 90 minutes of weightlifting. And then it would be 2 back-to-back hours of cardio. So I would either do like an hour on the bike and then an hour jog, or like an hour on the ergometer, which is the arm machine. An hour of that is insane, by the way.
Did he have somebody like watching you and doing these workouts with you, or did he leave and just assume you were doing this?
When I would do the weights, I was training with the workout crew. So it would, the guys that I was training with and a couple of girls, most of the guys were like Major League Baseball players or hockey players that were off season that were like trying to stay in top level shape. It was really like a performance weight training camp. It's called Pro Camp for a reason in Venice. And I definitely got in the best shape of my life. And at certain points, it was really hard because it was every day for so many hours just on my body. And I was like, man, this is intense. And they, even for what Pro Camp was, they made sure that what I was doing was always harder than what everybody else was doing. So we would be doing like, okay, let's say we did 90 minutes of weights. They would be like, okay, you have to do jumping jacks between your weight sets. So while everyone else is waiting at the machine to do it, you have to do the jumping jacks or like pop squats or like side step. You know, it was stuff like that. They would constantly be like ratcheting it up. And I just sort of just was super focused and determined. And I really wanted to be there and I wanted to be in the film. And I got into really good shape. And it was funny. I didn't know this at the time, but apparently TR told Peter Berg after the fact that I had trained harder than anyone he had ever had other than Chris Chelios, who was an NHL
Stanley Cup champion, Hall of Famer, Chicago Blackhawks. I know Chelly, fucking best.
Yeah, apparently TR, who's like the man, he told Pete that. He never told me that, but he told Pete that.
Did you call your agents and say, so I don't have this role, but I have to work out for the next couple of months to find out if I do, so you can't really work out a deal because there's no deal to be had until Pete gives the word?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of nerve-wracking in that way, because if I would like lag on any of the workouts, or if I was doing, you know, like an interval, like long intervals or circuits, we did a lot of circuits. If I would fall behind, they would be like, oh, we're going to tell Pete that he's not going to hire you.
No, they did not. They said that. No, and they were serious?
Really like hardcore like that. You know, and he's like, Pete has told me to give an honest assessment. And if you fail at this, I will not, like, you are not going to do this.
I mean, were you pissed? Were you like, did you kind of laugh it off? Or were you like, fuck?
Oh, I mean, I was frustrated. I mean, I remember one day I was on the leg press and they just kept stacking more 45s. On the leg press to where like I genuinely couldn't do it. Like it was crazy. And at one point I was like, fuck you motherfucker. Like I stood up and like chewed these guys out and like walked off. And all the like hockey guys were like, oh my gosh, like this is so, but like I think that they were trying to like
get me
to like, yeah. I mean, I think that that's so, he's like, all right, now that we've got this anger, let's channel it. You know what I mean? It was like all this sensei, you know, like Karate Kid kind of stuff with TR.
And when was the moment that he called you, that he said, you got it? And how'd that happen? Do you remember that?
It might have almost been like a text message, like, you're in or something like that. You know, it was like, and I was, it was funny because the reason why I don't remember that moment was because after like 3 months of that, I was in such good shape that like I knew there was no way I wasn't going to get it.
Right.
Like I was actually confident at that part. In the beginning, I wasn't confident because I wasn't in shape at all. I was really like, oh, I don't know. But by the end, I was like, man, I can run like 7 miles like fast, you know, and do right. all, you know.
And you had Navy SEALs like breathing down your neck on set and things like that. That's what I hear. Like you were, it was just very intense shooting. Was it always intense?
Yeah, it was always pretty intense. Yeah. I mean, the SEALs were, they really wanted their story to be told in the right way. And Marcus Luttrell had a big responsibility to get that story right for all the families. So he took that seriously.
Wow. How much weight did you lose playing Christopher McCandless? How much weight did you weigh?
So
for Into the Wild.
I remember I was 156 when I got the part because I hadn't gotten on a scale in ages. And I remember I got on the scale and I was like, Dad, like my scale's broken. Will you get me a new one? And he's like, oh, I'll pick you up one at Walmart. And then he like brought me a new scale and I got on it. I was like, this scale's broken too, man. And I think my dad was like, maybe the scale's not broken. And I was like, so I remember Sean wanted me to get pretty lean because the real Chris was pretty lean even before he had that big weight loss. So I lost probably, went down to like 133 from 156 just to get into like the shape for the movie, for the normal parts. And then we shot like half the movie. And I was doing a lot of like running every day and eating healthy and, you know, spin. And then there was like a 2 week shutdown in the middle of the shoot. And I had gone down probably to like 124. And then I had 2 weeks. So I was doing like 2 spin classes a day and like eating like the bare minimum. And at one point, dude, 2 spin classes a day on no food is so hard. Like, I don't know if you've ever done that. Probably haven't, but
no.
It's like psychologically, like it is so like, it's like you're just like, oh, like it like hurts. It doesn't physically hurt, but like it psychically hurts. And I remember I would like sit up in those like 2 or 3 weeks and like my vision would go totally orange for like 15 seconds. I literally blind. And I remember I texted my doctor. I was like, hey, doc, I'm going blind when I'm sitting up like every time. And he was like, oh, you need to just take some salt because that's like low blood pressure. So I did that. And then that kind of went away. So wow. Then I went down to like 115 pounds and we went to Alaska. Yeah. And then I was there and we shot. The good news is we shot most of those scenes in like 6 day period. So I was like crazy skinny. But like on like the third or fourth day, like I could like feel like my heart like palpitating. Like I could actually feel it like boom, boom. And I was like, oh shit. So I told him, I was like, we got to finish these scenes because I can like feel I don't have much time to like keep shooting this. This is like probably not safe.
That is insane. I mean, you know, I watch these shows. You ever watch like Alone? The show's Alone where people
I've heard of it. It's funny. One of my friends from childhood, his brother is like on Alone right now.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, they drop them off and it's real. I mean, they're alone and whoever lasts the longest is the winner. And it's crazy the shit that they do. But they have doctors that come in every, I don't know when it is, every week to just check on them, check their vitals. Now, someone who is 159 or whatever you were in the beginning to drop down to 115, were they always monitoring you? Were they always making sure, hey, he's okay? I mean, because sounds pretty dangerous.
I had a really talented doctor that the insurance company had me work with, and he was really experienced, and he was one of the main doctors on Biggest Loser. So I was kind of consulting with him, but then at a certain point, I the last few pounds, I think that I wasn't like approved to lose, you know right. what I mean? But I'm also, you know, I'm like 5'6.5", 5'7". I mean, I would actually, I'd still say that like I've seen way more extreme. I mean, I don't look at that as like a weight loss kind of, I mean, it's a weight loss role, but I don't look at it like that. I look at like what Jared Leto did in Dallas Buyers Club, or what Bale did in The Machinist, or even what Matt Damon did in Courage Under Fire. I actually think those dudes lost like more weight. You know, I think it feels like I lost a lot more weight because of the environment within the story too, and the characters starving and all that. So it really seems like it. But if you actually were to compare my like height and body mass and everything to some of those other ones, like I think there's actors that have lost more for sure.
Wow. You know, it says Christopher McCandless wanted to explore the unexplored and discover a life without responsibility, possessions, people, money. But in doing so, he went to his death from Into the Wild. I mean, do you ever consider, because I know I do, it probably crosses everyone's mind. I mean, because you know how Hollywood can be and how crazy it could be. And was there an essence of you in when you played the role where you felt like there is something that makes you want to get away sometimes, that makes you want to just disconnect from everything? Maybe not as an extreme level, but something to just like break away and just like not have to deal with all the bullshit and just kind of live your life and see what it's really about.
There's definitely an appeal that I think struck a chord with me and so many other people to the story. The idea, the call of the wild, or the beckoning of the open road that we all have, the ability to sort of leave the past behind and move forward and have a new fresh start, and a new kind of a new horizon at every day. I mean, I know in one of the letters McCandless wrote The Old Man Run, where he's saying like, you know, the core of man's spirit comes from new experiences. And there really is something to that, you know, what those new experiences are, or the way that you have them kind of varies, but there's, you know, part of what keeps you alive is that kind of adventure, whatever those adventures are. And I really related in a great way, especially at that age. You know, I just turned 21 when we shot that movie. So I was like, it was like just a big adventure to me. You know, I think part of appreciating that story is also sort of like appreciating some of the wisdom that McCandless got, but like hard-earned wisdom, you know, and that like I sound like the older guy now saying that, but, you know, like, was it cool that he didn't contact his parents? No. And I would almost argue that like he would have thought that by the end, you know, and happiness is real when shared, you know, like the fact that he wrote that, that's like a reckoning with what he's saying. That's a slight rebuttal to a lot of what he was doing. So that isn't, that's not like a, oh, you just got to go into the wild and live there alone. That's a different meaning. You know, he didn't write like happiness is so great because I'm alone right now. You know,
right. He realized
so
how much
saying happiness is only real when shared and you're alone. Like clearly you're, you know, not doing exactly what you think you should be doing in that way, in that moment. So I feel like that story and the character, you know, ideally you would get a appreciation for adventure and a love of nature and the idea of the core of man's spirit comes from new experiences, but you can also take like the lessons that he learned without having to pay that kind of high price.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, having a guide that embraces company and socialness and you know, doesn't just give you that sense of adventure with like a complete rejection of like sharing of happiness with others. And it took him a lot to get to that point because he had had such an unhappy childhood in a lot of ways. You know, he had a really hard time with his parents.
Inside of You is brought to you in no small part thanks to our lovely supporters over on Patreon. Folks, if you enjoy the podcast, you love talking about episodes, you want to stay involved in the Inside of You community, I highly suggest that you check it out. Check out Patreon. It's quickly turned into one of the coolest things I've been a part of over the last year, and that's for sure. Patreon.com/InsideOfYou is where you go. If you want to get early access to episode content, check out the Patreon. If you want to interact with other fans of the show, check out the Patreon. If you want to get exclusive access to have your questions asked during the show, check out the Patreon. Heck, if you just love what we do and you like Ryan and you want to just keep this train a-rolling, check out the Patreon. It really helps the podcast more than you could possibly know. It doesn't take much to get involved, and I'm there all the time chatting with folks and putting together live hangouts. I literally would not be able to do this without you guys. So thank you again and again. To get more involved in the community today, head over to patreon.com/insideofyou. That's patreon.com/insideofyou. See you there soon.
How was your childhood? Was it pretty good? I mean, were your parents really supportive and always, you know?
I was very lucky that I had super supportive, loving parents. You know, I realize now more than ever, as being a parent myself, how important that is. So I'm very grateful that I had parents that kind of put the attention that they did into me.
Your mom was a visual artist and pop-up books designer.
Yeah.
Do you know how much that would help my dumbass growing up in school?
Well, you know, my mom is just an artist. She's just always drawing or painting or making something. I mean, she's always been like that. I think she's very industrious. You know, she never stops doing that. I definitely get some of that from her in the way that I am. I try to always be doing something creative in some way or doing something. It doesn't have to be creative.
Can you be alone? Can you go on excursions for a week at a time alone with no one and just, can you do that? Do you like doing that?
No, I can't do that.
You don't like being alone?
I like being alone sometimes, but that was one of the big things on Into the Wild that I had to do, is I had to learn, like I had to like go on hikes by myself. Oof. For long periods of time and like just learn how to deal with that. You know what I mean? Because it was so foreign to me. I'm a pretty social creature.
Yeah, I'm a creature. I'm a social creature. I got to talk about this because, you know, I'm a horror movie fanatic. If you looked in here, you'd see all these horror movie posters. I just love horror. But I know you work with William Friedkin and, you know, I mean, The Exorcist, and I mean, he's done a ton of other shit, amazing shit. But when you worked with him, first of all, was he a dick or was he really cool and open? It just seems like he'd be so intense.
I remember the first time I met Billy, I like drove up to his cool mansion in the hills. It's like this gothic mansion, and I go in and it's literally like Satan's office, like a massive office filled with books, but it's like darkly lit with all this dark gothic art on the walls. And he like was sitting like, it felt like by a fireplace in like a super high backed chair.
Like you're meeting just, Dracula. Like,
speaking in very controlled tones. And like, I mean, I was like, whoa, this is so crazy. I mean, I definitely had vibes of like, this guy directed The Exorcist, and then he said something that was kind of like spooky and supernatural. And I was like, oh shit, like this guy's intense.
Did you ever ask him any questions about The Exorcist? Like any insights?
He talked about The Exorcist all the time.
And he didn't care?
He loved talking about it.
Really?
I mean, it was like, it clearly had such an, you know, I think that movie, it's just like, imagine making a movie that affected the world that much. I mean, it was, at the time, it was the biggest box office movie of all time.
Yeah.
And it was considered like one of the most disturbing movies ever. I mean, it was like, he was saying that there was like, they showed it everywhere in the world. He said something about, there was something like in like South America, like showing like natives to those areas that had like come down from the mountains that had never even seen movies before. Like they didn't even know what a movie was, and they were just watching the movie, and like they didn't even know how to pay for the movie. He said they were throwing change at the screen. I mean, like just wild stuff. And I feel like Billy is like, he really like, it almost makes it scarier because when he talks about it, he's like, he's a kind of, he really believes a lot of it, you know?
Well, it's based, like The Exorcist was based on a real book. I mean, it was based on it happened to a
Billy's
boy,
like
I think.
Believer. Like he like, it's almost scarier too when he talks about it because you're like, oh wow, he's like, he's not like some skeptic. He's like, and it's all real. You know what I mean? It's like, oh,
Was there any like one story that you asked him about that is interesting that he really didn't talk about a lot or the public doesn't know, just about The Exorcist or anything that he shot? Because I'm sure you pegged him for something. It's like, well, you're dealing with a young girl here who is X amount of years old and playing this role and doing. I mean, what did you talk
to him? He did say one thing. He said that if he were to go back, that he might have not. He didn't say he wouldn't. He said he might have not made that film with that actress. He's like, you know, it's like a crazy role and a young actress. And he said he might have not done that. You know, I thought that was interesting.
So he might have had regrets.
Well, you know, I mean, I think it was probably a pretty, I mean, I'm sure it was a tough shoot. And then just kind of being associated with that role. I don't know. But I honestly don't know, though, because he didn't say he wouldn't either. He just said he might have not.
Right, right. You know, your band, I love that you play music. I play music. I have an album out. I listen to Hysterical Kindness, Simple Things.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think people usually go, oh, another actor with a band. And then you listen to it and you're like, this I really, really enjoyed. And you're the lead singer, right?
Yeah. So Hysterical Kindness, I did based off this movie All Nighter, where I play a bluegrass singer. And they gave me these two guys that knew the producers that were real musicians. So when we were making the movie, I was like, well, let's like we recorded a Bob Singer cover song of Night Moves.
Oh.
And it sounded really cool. So we were like, my friend I played it for, he was like, why don't you guys just write some originals and see what comes of that? So I started writing a bunch of songs with these guys and we just started recording them like in their closet, literally. And we made this whole album. It's like 13 tracks. So then fast forward a couple of years later, I want to make more music. And they just, the guys, they're doing other stuff. They're making money in other ways, all that. They don't have the time. So I met this French music producer named Mathieu Caratier, who was kind of a mutual friend of mine. My buddy Matt Smiley is his girlfriend, Justine Waxberger. Like they were friends for a while. And Mathieu had been the editor of Premiere Magazine France for a while. So he kind of had like a film base, but he had done DJ work and he wanted to be a music producer. So we ended up making like one song together. And I liked the way it sounded. So we kind of kept going. And then we made one song that was like, oh, well, this is kind of a vibe. And we ended up in the last 2 years, we put out two albums and, you know, we kind of just, it's a different vibe than Hysterical Kindness, which is more bluegrass. The stuff I make with the Frenchman is more like an 80s kind of electronic pop kind of like.
Love it. Love that stuff.
Depeche Mode kind of vibe.
I'm in.
And we called the project Hirsch, which I kind of had to be talked into it, but they were like, just go to Hirsch. And I was like, all right.
Can I play one song? You care?
No, not at all.
There's this one song, She Calls You.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so here it is. This is She Calls You, Hysterical Kindness.
She calls you and you answer just a hand her. Your insides, she hangs up and you stay there just to pray where you see light. And it might be just a mix-up you could fix.
I mean, dude, I love that song. So what's next? So you just released something in March.
Yeah, this the second Hirsch album, Denialism, we put out. We got a pretty cool write up in American Songwriter. That was like the first kind of piece of anything that was written about it, which is pretty cool.
Will you play out anywhere eventually?
I would love to. I think it'd be cool. I mean, I'd probably need to take like 6 months of voice lessons so that I'm not doing 50 takes in a booth and auto tuning and melodizing my voice. You know, I might have a nice tone to my voice, but I have no like craft in terms of singing.
Well, I love the voice. It's unique and it just sounds cool. It sounds like it's got the indie cool feel that could easily pop out to mainstream. I don't know. I truly dug it, or I wouldn't have played it or even brought it up. I would have been like, fuck.
Thank you, Michael.
Yes, my friend. This is it. This is called Shit Talking with Emile Hirsch. Have you ever heard that? Has anyone ever called you Emily?
My life.
Or Emile?
That's like practically my nickname.
Do you just hate it? Or are you just used to it?
In elementary school? No, not at all. Oatmeal.
A mandwich is a meal.
Or a meal for his mama. This kid Sinclair in fifth grade was like, Emile. He was like literally like dribbling a basketball and he goes, a meal for his mama.
That was it. Like,
You're going places, kid.
You're going places. All right, this is called Shit Talking with Emil Hirsch. This is rapid fire. This is my. These are my patrons. So you just rapid fire answer them.
Okay.
Raj, during the pandemic, what's the longest stretch of time you went wearing the same clothes?
3 days.
Good answer. Kelly S., what's your favorite film in terms of the story itself?
Probably On the Waterfront.
Really? That's a good one. Yeah. That's a good one. I'm not saying it's not. Steph A., working on Alpha Dog, what was it like? It was such an intense film. I have to imagine it was not easy to make. Rest in peace, Anton.
It was a lot of fun. Great young cast. Everyone was friendly and had a good time. And Nick Cassavetes was rocking. And yeah, we had a lot of fun.
Little Lisa, what values are most important to you?
I think family is really important and, perseverance.
Maya P., what's the most challenging character you've portrayed and why?
I think overall, Chris McCandless in Into the Wild, because it had so many different types of challenges, physical and mental. And I was, still kind of learning and growing as an actor when I did it. So there was a lot to kind of adapt to as I went.
And Ray H., which is part of the question, how much research did you do on Chris McCandless before starting Into the Wild?
Definitely as much as I could do. I talked to a lot of his friends and family and parents and sister and read about him and watched everything I could and just tried to absorb as much as I could that would hopefully come through in some way.
Awesome. Midnight in the Switchgrass. Is it out now?
It comes out on the 23rd.
Freaking watch this, Midnight in the Switchgrass. Watch the trailer. You'll want to watch it. It's intense as shit. Emil Hirsch, this has been awesome, man. I feel like I know you already, and I love talking to you. Yeah, this has been a blast.
Fun. Thank you for having me on.
All right, buddy. I hope to see you soon. We'll play some pickleball.
Yeah, watch your hands, though, okay?
I will. I'll wear a glove.
Bye-bye.
See you, buddy. Another fun episode. I hope you liked Emil Hirsch. Ryan, did you enjoy this one? Was it a fun edit?
I did. Yeah, I mean, he's an interesting guy. Like, it's funny when you see these people that you've known about for a long time and then just sort of see them sit down and be people for an hour.
Yeah, it's just kind of open up and you don't know how they're going to be. Are they going to be like a character? Are they going to be like this? Yeah. And he's pretty much a dude.
Yeah.
He just comes across as a nice guy.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed him being on the podcast. Letting you know that Patreon, if you want to join the lovely Patreon to help support the podcast in other ways, go to Patreon, patreon.com/insideofyou. There's different tiers. You get merch from me and notes from me, and there's a bunch of stuff. Go to patreon.com/insideofyou. Also, my band is playing this weekend, Sunspin. You can go to sunspin.com for tickets, merch, Zooms, booking the band, anything you want. And Inside of You, the podcast, you could go to the Inside of You online store and get, anything from Inside of You mugs and t-shirts and to Lex Luthor pictures and Funko Pops and Smallville lunchboxes, bunch of great stuff on there. So if you want to do that, I will also be at Lexington Comic Con September 9th through the 12th. Actually, Dragon Con before that, September 4th in Atlanta. That weekend, Tom Welling and I will be together. Then Lexington September 9th, and then West Virginia September 24th. Very excited about these. Very excited about the cons. Hopefully, I'll see you there. We occasionally do this Smallville Nights thing, so you better get your tickets. And Ryan, you got anything going on?
Not at the moment. I went to the I went to the dentist today.
That's you all. Did? I just went to the dentist too. What did the dentist do to you? Jesus.
Just poked around. I had to do X-rays.
It kind of hurts.
I have a really, really bad gag reflex. And
a strong gag reflex.
I have a strong gag reflex. And so when he was moving the thing around with the X-rays, I vomited a little.
You did?
I did.
In your mouth?
Nope.
So you vomited outside of your mouth.
And I went, oops, and I caught it.
Were you embarrassed?
Yep. But he just kept going. He's like, it happens. He just gave me some paper towels and
oh my God, I've never done that before. I threw up in your hand.
I come so close every time, and today it actually happened.
Ryan threw up in his hand, folks.
I threw up in my hand.
Please give him shit. You could reach him on Twitter, Instagram, all that stuff. But guys, thank you for supporting the podcast. Thank you for listening. The handles are at Inside You Podcast on Instagram and Facebook, at Inside You Pod on Twitter. Please subscribe. It really helps. And if you write a review, it really helps a lot. And I hope you spread the word as much as you can. All right. Now it's time that at the end of every show, I read the top tier patrons. So these guys are on Patreon, patreon.com/insideofyou. These are the top tiers. They give the most. And I read their names off. And Ryan has memorized quite a few of them. Here we go. Nancy.
D.
Leah.
S.
Trisha.
F.
Sarah.
V.
Little.
Lisa.
U.
Kiko.
Jill.
E.
Brian.
H.
Lauren.
G.
Nico.
P.
Jerry.
W.
Robert.
B.
Jason.
W.
Apa.
Thean.
Kristen.
K.
Amelia.
O.
Wow.
Allison.
L.
Raj.
C.
Joshua.
D.
Emily.
Emily S.
Yes. CJ.
P.
Samantha.
M.
Jennifer.
N.
Stacy.
H.
L.
L.
Carly.
Carly H.
Jen.
S. F.
Jamal.
F.
I'm amazed.
I'm remembering the ones that come after before.
Yeah.
Weird.
Janelle. Huh.
B.
Carrie.
Washington.
No, Carrie B.
Carrie B.
Tabitha.
272, not to be confused with Tabitha 273.
Kimberly.
L.
E.
E.
Mike.
E.
Eldon.
Supremo.
99.
More.
Ra.
Mira.
Santiago.
F.
M.
M.
Sarah.
V.
F.
F.
Chad.
W.
Leanne.
P.
Janine.
You're
pretty amazing.
I don't know, Janine.
Janine R. Ray A. Maya P. Maddie S. Shannon D. Matt W. Belinda N. Kevin V. James R. Chris H. Dave H. Samantha S. Spider-Man Chase. Sheila G. Brad D. Ray H. T. Tom N. Suzanne B. Liliana A. Michelle K. Hannah B. Michael S. Talia M. Betsy D. Claire M. Liz J. Laura L. Chad L. Rachel or Rochelle. Nathan E. Marion. Meg K. Janelle P. Trav L. Dan N. Diane R. O.
Ajetta.
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 Lorraine G. Veronica K. Big Stevie W. Kendall T. Carol D. Then we got Sandy B. Angel M. Eric C. Rhiannon C. Stephen M. Corey K. Super Sam. Emily C. Sherry S. Coleman G. Dev Nexon. Michelle A, Liz L, Jeremy C, Andy T, Cody R, Chris E, Sebastian K, Gavinator, Ann H, Elliot M, John B, Brandy D, Yavor, and Bano, or Bano, B-A-N-O.
B-A-N-O.
Isn't that Bano?
And there's no tilde over the N?
No. Hmm. That would be bathroom then, wouldn't it?
That would be bathroom.
So it has to be Bano.
Bano, Bano.
Could maybe be, it's Bano. Is it Bano, guys?
Bano.
Thank you for listening. It's always a treat having you here, and it means the world to me that you guys continue to listen, and hopefully you'll continue to listen. From Michael Rosenbaum here in the Hollywood Hills.
I'm also Ryan Tejas.
Say goodbye in that camera right up there, Ryan. We'll just give a little wave. And thank you for allowing me to be inside of each and every one of you. I hope you have a wonderful week, and spread the word.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.